Once there was a man walking along in the countryside when he chanced upon a woman hard at work doing something that seemed kind of strange. By the time the man got there, she had already stretched out two long ropes in parallel, staking the ends at either side. Now she was in the process of laying boards across them and tying them to the ropes. The man said, "Excuse me, but might I ask what it is that you're doing?" The woman replied, "I am a bridge builder, and I am building a bridge." "But that's not a bridge," the man replied. "It's just a path on the ground." The woman paid him no mind. She just continued on with her work of laying boards between the ropes and tying them in place. When she was done, she stepped onto the boards and encouraged the man to join her. He did, and she said, "Wait for it." A minute passed, then another. And then a minute passed that seemed to last an hour, but was only a minute. And it passed. Suddenly, out of the blue, the ground began to shake. The air was filled with the sound of a deep, rolling rumble. And then a fissure opened. The man looked down beneath him, past the wood and the rope, and saw a deep chasm below, at the bottom of which were very pointy rocks and land sharks. The woman looked at him and said simply, "Now it's a bridge." At the beginning of the month, during the bridging ceremony, that uniquely Unitarian Universalist rite of passage marking the transition of graduating seniors from youth to young adult, I said that a bridge takes you from here to there, from this place to that place. Yet a bridge goes over something. A bridge over troubled water, if you will. Maybe it's a rickety rope bridge over an awesome abyss. Since the worship staff team decided that our working metaphor for the month of June would be bridges, I cut a line from a song, "Fortress Around Your Heart." The website SongFacts describes it like this. Sting calls this a song of reconciliation. It uses an abandoned fortress within a walled city as a metaphor for a relationship that has been through a figurative war, with Sting now ready to put the battles behind him and build a new alliance based on what they had. The line that's been echoing in my mind all this month is this: "Let me build a bridge, for I cannot fill the chasm. Let me build a bridge, for I cannot fill the chasm." The reason we need bridges is that whatever is beneath them is unpassable without them. The living bridges of Meghalaya make it possible to cross the monsoon-swollen rivers in that region, for instance. Or the Duge Bridge in China, which is 1,854 feet, about a third of a mile above the Pipe Baikan River, making it the highest bridge in the world. In the story of the bridge builder, she built her bridge before the chasm opened. Yet she wasn't just random in her location. Somehow she knew the fissure was there. Somehow she knew a chasm was coming. There are those who say that a chasm has opened up in this community. There are those who fear that it's unpassable, and that it might be impossible to fill. It goes by many names. The lead minister's performance, or lack thereof. The gaping deficit budget. Distrust of lay and professional leadership. an unnecessarily combative and divisive approach to the work of racial justice, a focus on the work of racial justice to the exclusion of everything else, a steadily eroding membership, the lead minister's personality, or perceived engagement, or leadership ability, or preaching style, or the limitations stemming from his mental health, the pervasive sense of a toxic dis-ease. I could go on, but by whatever name it's known, there are those who see a deep and dangerous chasm having opened up, and who fear that the best we have is a rickety rope bridge, and that we might not all be able to cross safely from here to there. There are others, of course, who don't see anything at all wrong. People for whom this talk of chaos and chasms is confusing. They are happy with the way things are, or at least happy enough, and didn't see any danger until people started talking about it. And for some of these people, it is those who are crying chasm who have caused it. So what are we to do about this situation? Is there a bridge we can build, or one already existing that will take us safely from this place to that place? Or is this chasm as unfillable as to some of us it seems? One thing we can do, one thing we can all do, is to take the Committee on the Ministry survey. This is the same survey we took 3 years ago, and while it doesn't go deep into actionable specifics, that's not what it was ever intended to do, then or now. This is a pulse survey, one which is designed to take the pulse of the congregation, to provide a snapshot of who we are right now and how we feel about it. In the crassest of terms, it's a customer satisfaction survey. Now, I say crass because we're not really customers here. We are members of a common covenanted community. I once heard someone say about UU congregations, we're not a drive-through restaurant where you can order a supersized community with a side of social justice. Instead, this person said, we're like your mama's kitchen, where if you want something, you can go ahead and get it for yourself. And while you're at it, would you be a doll and get me some iced tea? That's actually what my older son says when he wants his mom to get him something. Would you be a doll? My brother used to say, some people have funny children. I say that calling the survey a measure of customer satisfaction is crass because it's not, or at least it shouldn't be, just our satisfaction that's important. A part of what being a Unitarian Universalist is all about, or at least should be all about, is recognizing that it's not my needs that are paramount all the time, maybe even most of the time. To the extent we really are or want to be as diverse as we claim, it should be important to me that you get what you need, at least some of the time, even if that runs counter to what my perceived needs are. If we're just in this for what I get out of it, then we're doing it wrong. Thus ends that sermon within a sermon. One thing we can do about this dangerous division, this chasm that some of us are talking about, is to take that survey. For all of us to take that survey. All of us. Each of us. Surveys, any kind of survey, are notorious for engaging the most enthusiastic and the most disaffected. The vast majority of folks in the middle of that bell-shaped curve rarely feel motivated to take one. Kind of like midterm elections. Yet just like midterm elections, it's vitally important that everyone No matter what you feel about the various issues at play here, no matter how strongly you feel about them, it is vitally important that everyone participate. Because it is vitally important that the results of this survey really reflect the voice of the congregation as a whole. Your voice matters. Wherever you are in all of this, your voice matters. And if you haven't gotten an email from the Committee on the Ministry, which was titled, "We Want Your Opinion," or if you've lost it, or if you don't do email, please seek out, as I said, a member of the Committee on the Ministry so that they can make it possible for you to participate. The results of this survey might just show us that the divide isn't as deep as we thought. Or it might show us a way to build the bridge that we need to cross safely from where we are now to where we are going. There's another way we can fill the chasm. For many, the divide has to do with our congregation's finances. There are people who, for a variety of reasons, oppose the deficit budget that the board brought forward at the congregational meeting, which is why it was voted down. And there are those who opposed the deficit budget last year, too. And there are those who point out that we have not, in a long time, supported our own community to the extent we have needed to in order to support any budget. The UU consultant who worked with us earlier in the year said that we were one of the most underperforming congregations as to its financial support that he has ever worked with. Let that sink in. Just about any faith community, in any tradition, anywhere, struggles with its finances. And usually because they have less than they need, rather than the opposite problem. In fact, one church expert says that you can tell a lot about the health of a congregation by whether it sees these budget problems as a crisis or the cost of doing business as a church. But Mark Ewart said that we were one of the most underperforming congregations he has ever worked with. For some of us, this financial situation, and especially the budget gap proposed in last year's and this year's budgets, represents a deep chasm that we simply cannot cross. And yet, if 100 people make a pledge of $400, the budget gap we're talking about would be completely taken care of. And if 100 people make a pledge of just $10 a week, we'd have more than enough money to begin to do things like beginning to replenish our building reserve fund, something that is extremely important, yet which we haven't been able to do now for years. For some people, this $400 would be an addition to what they're currently pledging. For others, it would represent their first pledge. There are a lot of people who are engaged with this community who have never supported the community financially, besides what they put into the offering plate when they're here in the sanctuary. Pledging gives the board an idea of what resources to expect in the coming year. It helps leadership build that budget. You can always change your pledge from one year to the next if situations change, but your pledge is your best estimate of your ability to generously support this community. Last year, we began a practice of automatically renewing a person's pledge at the level it was the year before. If you pledged $1,500 last year, you will automatically be registered as pledging $1,500 this year. This is a practice which many congregations do, especially larger congregations such as ours. We will continue to make general appeals, of course, and a letter is going out this week to remind people of the expectations that people who call this their spiritual home should do what they can to support it. And we will continue to make personal visits with those who request them and those who have shown in the past a greater willingness to change their pledges from year to year. Yet anyone can change their pledge at any time. Anyone can, say, add $400 to the amount they pledged last year, or make a first-time pledge of $400, or more, of course. A colleague of mine likes to point out that we use don't require people to tithe, don't require people to pledge 10% of their income. He reminds folks that you can always pledge 12% or 15% if you want to. That's okay too. There are pledge cards at each of the entrances to the sanctuary and clearly marked boxes to receive them. You can also pledge online quite easily. But this is one chasm, one cavernous canyon that we can fill. It's one of the deep divisions that we can get across, bridge or no bridge. Some of the gaps between here and there will be harder for us to navigate. Yet I believe that we can. In fact, I feel certain that we can if, and only if, everyone involved remembers that everyone else involved is motivated by a common love of this community. It's not personal, no matter how personal it might seem. The sides, if you will, in this discussion of where to go and what to do next, all would like to see this faith community be as healthy as it can possibly be. There are some strong disagreements about just what this community is and should be, and some very strong disagreements about what will constitute health and what we need to do to be healthy. Yet despite these disagreements, the motivation is the same. I truly believe that. And I believe that if we can all remember that, if we can all believe that of one another, then it is not only possible, but extremely probable that we will get where we need to go safely. Let me repeat. This is not personal, even though some of the issues revolve around individual persons. This is all about the community. So let's focus on that. Let's strive to keep our common love of this community before us at all times. And let us act out of that love in all of our interactions. There is no need for combativeness, no need for defensiveness. There is no need for acrimony on anyone's part. Let's assume good intentions of one another, recognizing that that does not mean that the solution to all of this will be simple. It won't. It is possible that we won't be able to fill this chasm. It is possible that not everyone will be able to or will want to cross that bridge that gets built. Yet we need not tear our community apart. However we get there, wherever there is, this community, made sacred by those who have gone before us and held sacred by all who call this place home now, will be made healthy through this process if we behave in healthy ways through this process. We can do it.
I know we can do it. And if you know that we can do it, let me hear you say amen.
Amen.